The Tom Woods Show, episode 1846.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, folks, if you have had it up to here with the COVID irrationality, you are going to love my brand new free ebook, COVID Charts CNN Forgot. Pick it up at chartstheyforgot.com. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. Connor Boyack is back with us again, and we're going to talk in a minute about all the things this guy does. He just exhausts me even listing all the things that Connor is up to. I've known him for a long time, and man, does he put out really, really good material. You may know him from his children's book series, The Tuttle Twins. Well, he's got a brand new addition to that series that's out aimed at toddlers, and it's called, appropriately enough, The Tuttle Toddlers book series. So we're going to look at three titles in that series today. Now, obviously, this is aimed at children, these books, and the conversation we're going to have is going to have to do with children. But whether or not you have children, well, you got to be concerned about what children are learning. And the work Connor is doing is just so, so important that I just urge you to listen very carefully to what he has to say. And again, I think he's unbelievably prolific and productive and deserves our support. Connor, welcome back.
Thanks, Tom, for having me again.
I don't know how you're still alive, man. Will you stop doing so much work? It's incredible. The things you're doing, it's too many at this point. It is just out of control.
I'm glad to hear that, Tom, because I feel like it's not enough still.
Oh my gosh, yeah, there's something matter with you. So you're running the Libertas Institute in Utah, and then you've got the Tuttle Twins book series. Now you've got a series of toddler books we're going to talk about. You're doing an animated series. You have a foundation for teaching economics to children. I'm sure, what am I leaving out? Tell me, just go ahead. I mean, you're writing books. You're working on another book.
We're working on, I think, six more books right now. We just published guidebooks for teenagers last fall. We did story novels for teens the year before that. I mean, we're trying to run as fast as we can because, I mean, the world is crazy and a lot of families are demanding this stuff. So we're trying to pump it out quick.
Well, this is insane. Real, honestly, it makes me look like a lazy bum. And that, you know, that takes a lot. So good work, man. So let's talk about this new thing you have going. I have three books I'm looking at in front of me here in digital form, and they are for toddlers. Now, You know, you got into some trouble a little while ago. There was some article that went after you guys for propagandizing young people, because of course, we all know that none of that is going on in any institution in American society. Until Connor Boyack came along, little children were just impartially shown a bunch of ideas and then given a dispassionate lecture about the importance of finding the one they thought was most persuasive. Came along and ruined everything. But some people may say toddlers. I mean, toddlers? I mean, can't we just let them be innocent kids? So talk to me about your thinking behind this.
All right. Well, I'll share a story because I think lessons are best told through stories, which I think is why Tuttle Twins has been so effective to teach these, you know, otherwise dry economic history, political ideas, and make them come alive for frankly, kids, but also people of all ages. And that's kind of the answer I'll drive to with toddler books is really they have a broader appeal, you know, beyond just 2 and 3 year olds. But here's the story. So I wake up, this was only like 3-4 days ago, and I'm getting tagged like crazy on Facebook. All right, what's the latest, you know, daily outrage that's going on? It was all these people in my community alerting me to this elementary school that had plastered all over its walls the ABCs, one big letter on each paper with a term below, teaching these young kids letters like A is for activism, S is for social justice, W is for woke, Y is for yes, we can, which of course has no political connotation at all, Obama, right? And so all these letters are teaching this leftist social justice woke crap to elementary school kids that are none the wiser. And so you look at that and you say, well, here's this taxpayer-funded leftist jargon nonsense being taught to kids. Their parents have no clue, but for the fact that someone saw it and took some photos to kind of alert the public and let people know. And so to the people who say, oh, Connor, the Tuttle Twins, you're just, you know, this is propaganda for kids. I say, there's already propaganda out there. There's already, you know, if you're not teaching your kids the values that you believe in, the principles that you think are true, other people are going to expose your children to counter ideas. Your kids are going to be a sponge. to soak up whatever they're told. They're going to be a blank slate to accept as true, you know, whatever some authority figure in their life at school or wherever tells them is true. And so my defense of the Tuttle twins is, well, there's a more innocuous definition of what is propaganda, right? It's propagation of information. There's certainly a negative, you know, twist to it, and rightly so. But you're just propagating things, or indoctrination. You're teaching doctrine, right? And again, there's a negative connotation to doing that, and rightly so. But fundamentally, when we're talking about children, it is transmitting values, transmitting the understanding of certain principles and ideas and a moral framework. And every parent has the right to teach their children what they think is true. And I would go so far as to say the obligation, because if they don't do it, others will, you know, teach their children ideas they totally disbelieve in. So the Tuttle Twins books, and certainly even these toddler books, are designed to help parents have a vocabulary and a language with which to communicate to their children these foundational ideas. So yes, okay, we're doing toddler books, which, I mean, they're super cute, really fun and exciting. But as you'll see, Tom, and for others, you go to tuttletwins.com/toddler, you can see examples of the books. We've got illustrations that are reinforcing the ideas. And then we have little, you know, 2-3 sentence, little paragraphs for each term so that the older kids can still have, you know, an educational opportunity with this other one. Like, you look at most toddler books and it's like, A is for apple, right? And that's it. And so that's clearly a toddler book. We're putting in a little more meat so that obviously a 2-3-year-old isn't going to be able to do the paragraphs, but an older kid can. And so suddenly these books become a resource for a much broader age range.
All right. Well, I guess fair enough. I mean, I have no problem with it, but I could imagine some people hesitating. I'm looking at these three. Two of them I would have thought of right away. One would just be ABCs of Liberty, basically. Well, sure. I mean, that's what the whole series is all about. Then you've got one on economics, which is important, obviously, but also I personally think that the value of this is to start as early as possible teaching people the importance of, frankly, cooperation, mm-hmm. because in the grand scheme of things, that is what's happening in the global division of labor. It's only in the frivolous, superficial sense that it's competition. It is an immense global cooperation to make possible. In fact, let me interrupt myself. I can't remember the guy's name, but there's a guy who has a YouTube channel whose entire purpose is to show him working on DIY projects where he creates something legitimately absolutely from scratch. Mm-hmm. So he made a turkey sandwich scratch.
Yeah, yeah. Yep.
So you know what I'm talking about?
Like
he harvested the wheat,
right.
He slaughtered the turkey, he did absolutely everything, and it took him basically forever, and it cost him $1,500 and,
right.
and whatever, you know, so to show
and it turned out like crap too.
He ate it and he said, "It's okay."
Right.
It's not even the best sandwich I've ever had. So I always say to people who are anti-billionaire, billionaires are the source of our problems, that the billionaire or the person investing in capital is the difference between you doing that and spending $1,500 on a sandwich and devoting your whole life to it, and the $8 you spend on a sandwich devoting no time to it.
Right.
The difference between one and the other is the totally unearned bonus that you get for existing in the age of these people who invest in capital. So to me, emphasizing economic concepts, you know, as early as possible, I hope can inoculate people against stupid, destructive, anti-civilization ideas. But you have a third one. I'm going to start with that one.
All right.
On, of all things, the American Revolution. Now, how did you choose that?
Okay, I'm going to give your listeners a little teaser here, something I don't think I've revealed anywhere else. So a little Tom Woods show bonus.
That is great. That makes me happy. Go ahead. Let's hear it.
You've been good to me, so I'll be good to your audience.
Okay.
We're working on a project right now that is near and dear to my heart. And you as a historian, I think, will definitely recognize what I'm about to say, Tom. I was part of a group about a year and a half ago. This philanthropist brought together a lot of the different groups who are working on civic education from kind of a liberty, freedom, right of center perspective. And the purpose of the meeting was try to say like, hey, we've got the 1619 project. We've got all this garbage on the left. We've got activism, history, and all this kind of stuff. What are we going to do about it? How do we make sure that we're teaching the truth about American history? And to me, it was a rather depressing meeting. It was kind of like cat herding, right? Every group was like, well, I do this over here and I do this. And I came away from that like the Tuttle twins, we've not really gotten into history yet. We've taught some history in some of our books. You know, when we talk about Creature from Jekyll Island, we can mention like the Weimar Republic, right? And things like that, where there's some historical references. But we've not really done history per se. So I'm flying home from that meeting and I'm like, you know what? I feel like I need to dabble more in this. I went on eBay and Amazon and I bought a whole bunch of social studies history books, thinking like, you know, third to eighth grade, kind of that range. And so I've actually got the stack in my office. I get all these books. I turn to the sections all about, you know, the colonial era, revolutionary era, formation of the U.S. government. And I was blown away. And it's not going to be any surprise to you or any of the listeners, right? I was blown away to see my expectations met. And that is, all of these books taught the facts, right? George Washington did this and Patrick Henry said that. And on this date, this thing happened. They all taught the superficial facts. Literally none of them taught any substance. At most, they would say, oh, they were upset about no taxation with representation. There was no philosophy. There was no ideas. There was no enlightenment, no, you know, influence of the Bible. Like none of these deeper things that motivated all of these historical actors to, you know, fight the world's largest empire. And to me, history without that substance is irrelevant. We all throw around that quote, you know, those who don't learn from the past are condemned to repeat it, right? Except our curriculum and books for the rising generation do them a disservice because it doesn't teach them the substance of the past that can apply. Again, like when, you know, John Adams did a thing in the past has no enduring relevance to my life. But if we talk about the ideas that he believed in, the motivating forces and influences, those, albeit in a slightly different shape, exist today. And suddenly, you know, learning from the past so as not to repeat it in the future makes sense, where right now it doesn't with any curriculum. So that's the first problem, is they don't teach the substance. The second problem with all these books is they don't help a kid in 2021, when we're recording this, understand why what happened in 1776 is relevant to their life today, right? It's the perennial question in public school, like, oh, when am I ever going to use this in life? Oh, someday it'll, you know, have meaning for you, whatever. Except that's not really true with history. I mean, imagine when we're talking about the Bill of Rights, and let's say we're going over the Fourth Amendment, right? And we're talking about the writs of assistance, and which we put in our little toddler book. I think that's W is for writs of assistance. And so imagine when we're talking about the writs of assistance and why the founders were motivated to do the Fourth Amendment. Imagine a history book that for a fourth grader says, oh yeah, we have the NSA today and they spy on us all the time and nothing you do is in secret and there's a permanent record, as Edward Snowden likes to call it, of your entire life and the government can invade your privacy, you know, at its pleasure. Suddenly, the concerns of the founding fathers have a more modern relevance and connection to a kid's life and all of our lives. So this is my indictment of social studies material. So what we are doing all this year, it's probably going to take us well into early next year, is we are creating a Tuttle Twins textbook of sorts, where we're covering kind of the early colonial era all the way through the signing of the Constitution and ratification. And so we're going to teach the facts and we're going to teach the accurate history. But think of this like, you know, Tom, how all of our children's books are based on like original kind of liberty texts, right? We're trying to distill these ideas. So what we're doing effectively here is taking Rothbard's Conceived in Liberty and turning it into a Tuttle Twins version, where we're teaching a lot of historical information. We're going to have like 25 plus chapters, where every chapter is a different Tuttle Twins story, where they're learning through story about what history is and what happened and why it's relevant today and what those forces and influences were that have modern connections. I'm so passionate about this, and I felt kind of pent up that I haven't been able to really talk about it publicly yet. So you prompted me, and I'm dropping this little nugget here. It's going to take us a while because this is a very big project, but we've got historian consultants in the mix, and we're doing a lot of writing. Elijah's doing some phenomenal illustrations. It's basically like 25 Tuttle Twins books in one in terms of total length of writing and illustrations and stuff. And so it's going to take us a little while. To your question, Tom, why do a history book? Well, because we're going to start leaning more into history and potentially continue that history, right? Imagine volume two could be birth of a new nation until the, you know, war between the states, and we can just continue on in that path. We thought doing a toddler book on this topic would be a first little fun way for us to dip our toe in the waters for what is much more to come, hopefully in the near future.
That's tremendous to hear. Wow. I'm glad you shared that with us. And I guess you and I have a similar pet peeve. I find, likewise, that the way the American War for Independence is presented is in such a way as to make it seem utterly remote and involving such alien principles, or not principles that we reject, but principles that are irrelevant to us today. I mean, who cares about no taxation without representation in 2021? I mean, it's a very remote kind of issue. And so I've always gone out of my way to emphasize, well, the real issue was the idea of the Constitution, the unwritten British Constitution, that you can't just arbitrarily say, well, we declare this to be constitutional because we say it is.
Right.
The colonial position was it's unconstitutional if it violates longstanding tradition. And it was the British who were basically taking a legal positivist position, saying, well, if it's duly promulgated, it's part of the Constitution. And so that's why it's stupid to criticize the so-called strict construction version of the Constitution in the U.S. because it was established precisely to fight against the very loose construction that the British imposed on Americans that led them to revolt against a constitution that was like nailing jelly to a wall. That's why we had a written constitution that we wanted to interpret strictly. This isn't some theory that Justice Scalia came up with in the 20th century. So this is very relevant to us. But when you hear stuff like this, no wonder they don't want to talk about it like that.
Right.
They want it to be, you know, some weird principle that nobody cares about anymore. So good on you for talking about it. But let's go back to more fundamental things. If I'm flipping through this book, which indeed, as a matter of fact, I sort of metaphorically am right now, on liberty, what are concepts that you want to, I mean, some of these concepts, to be honest with you, slightly remind me of, do you know about the series where it's like a toddler book on, I don't know if it's nuclear physics.
Yeah, right.
And it's, you know, and it's obviously completely impossible and utterly beyond a toddler.
Yeah.
So, okay. I mean, to what extent is it kind of that? And to what extent is it really a thing where, okay, maybe they won't get the whole thing right away, but it gets them accustomed to hearing certain words and associating certain images with certain words.
So when we started exploring the idea of these toddler books, the books that you referenced were an inspiration. So those are by a gentleman named Chris Ferry, F-E-R-R-I-E. And he's got things like, you know, ABCs of physics, ABCs of engineering, quantum physics for babies, right? And so almost like a gag gift in a sense, right? Like you're at a what do they call it? A baby shower for your buddy, right? Who's having his first kid and like, hey, they have blockchain for babies, right? And so, you know, it's almost more for the adults than it is for the kids, right? It's like a
This
is cool. And so that was definitely inspiration for us. But as is our style, and I mentioned this earlier, you know, our children's books, we target them for kids age 5 to 11, but we've got 3 and 4 year olds who are able to read along and understand. We've certainly got a lot of teenagers. And then frankly, like half the parents who get our books, according to our survey, say that they've learned like a lot in our books, that they're learning a ton of new information that they were never exposed to. So that's kind of our format is like, we want to target an age. We want to authentically have things for that age, but we want through the illustrations, through the terms, the story to have almost like when you watch The Simpsons, right? You know, like the kids are laughing along and whatever, but then there's that adult level of humor that's baked in as well. So with these toddler books, like sure, you know, yes, we wanted some, you know, basic phonetics and learning letters and having some terms, but you know, in the economic book, Q is for quantitative easing.
Yeah.
Right? Like no 2-year-old is going to be able to pronounce that. So we do have that element of like, ha, this is fun, right? Like I feel fun and smart reading this to my little toddler. And ultimately it is for that kind of prolonged exposure as they get a little bit older, can say bigger words, understand bigger ideas, and have that broader age range of exposure.
Hey folks, let's take a minute to thank our sponsor, BetterHelp. I'm going to speak very frankly to you right now. Life is difficult. And a lot of times we could use some help, but maybe we don't seek out that help because we're surrounded on social media by people whose lives seem to be perfect. And so we feel like, well, gee, they seem to be sticking it out all right. Well, I'll just tough it out myself. No. First of all, you're not getting the real truth about everybody's lives on social media. And secondly, help is so readily available to you right from the comfort of your own home, thanks to BetterHelp. There are all kinds of things that can be interfering with your happiness. Everything from stress and anxiety to trauma or depression or anger. And BetterHelp will assess your needs and match you with your own licensed professional therapist. You can start communicating in under 24 hours. This is not self-help. It's professional counseling. You can send a message to your counselor anytime. You get timely and thoughtful responses. Plus, you can schedule weekly video or phone sessions. It's convenient, professional, and affordable. And in fact, so many people have been using BetterHelp that they're recruiting recruiting additional counselors in all 50 states. Well, I want you to start living a happier life today. As a listener, you'll get 10% off your first month by visiting betterhelp.com/woods. Join over 1 million people taking charge of their mental health. Again, that's betterhelp, HELP.com/woods. So by the way, they're all called, as I said at the very beginning, the ABCs of X, Y, and Z. So liberty, economics. Do you have ambitions for doing, now you said you have more books in the pipeline, but is it in this series in particular, The Tuttle Toddlers?
So yeah, we are planning, you know, more children's books. We're working on book 12 right now, which is based on Crisis and Leviathan by Bob Higgs, which is certainly going to be a very timely book to all the nonsense that's going on. We're doing another teen novel. We're doing more of our teen guidebooks. We're doing more toddler books as well. So yes, across the whole Tuttle Twins, what do you call it now? Empire, our content empire. We're producing absolutely a ton more books, including more toddler books in the future.
All right, awesome. So I'm looking at the economics one. And yeah, there are some things that might be a little hard, but there are some things that you could explain to somebody. I mean, they're not going to understand John Maynard Keynes, but they are going to hear that name said in the household from time to time.
With so a boom and a hiss, right?
Right, right. So it's not bad for them to say, oh yeah, I remember that guy. But I think that some of the stuff, the way you talk about in the Liberty book, the way you talk about property, private property, and that when you own something, you're the boss. You get to decide what happens on your property. I think a 3-year-old, a 4-year-old can understand that. Like if you have a toy, you decide what happens with it. I mean, you decide when you want to use it and what's going to happen with it and so on and on. So there are things that do correspond to real aspects of a real child's life in this book.
Well, think also in the Liberty book of like B is for bodily autonomy or C is for consent. Elijah illustrated, you know, Ethan, little toddler Ethan, being open to giving a hug to dad, right? He's saying, yes, please, right? Whereas little toddler Emily is holding a hand up and saying, no, thanks. We had this conversation as parents when our kids were little, right? Maybe the grandma or aunt would come along and try and force a hug or like, hey, give me a kiss, right? Onto the toddler. And of course, there's a certain aspect of that. It's benign, it's family, it's kind of social accepted, you know, behavior and so forth. But there's also this element of like, sorry, but you know, if he, for whatever reason, doesn't want to give a kiss to grandma right now, then that's his decision. It's his, you know, body. And so those principles, even at a young age, can also be quite understood and daily practiced by kids of different personalities and demeanor who may more strongly resist you trying to, you know, give them a kiss or have them sit on your lap or let, you know, uncle so-and-so hold them, you know, for a while. And so there's a lot of those ideas that we're excited to have in these books because, yeah, they do have kind of that application at that younger age.
I have to confess that I am particularly fond of the page on the NAP, the non-aggression principle, because, of course, it's given in the acronym as the NAP. And so you've got two toddlers wearing a really cute one-piece pajamas, and one of them's got a nightcap on, and one's holding a teddy bear. And then you say, no, not that kind of nap. And then the non-aggression principle says we shouldn't hurt others, but we can defend ourselves if others try to hurt us. I tell you, I would have no problem explaining that to a 3 or 4-year-old. No problem, because they would immediately see the justice of that.
Yep. Yeah, and honestly, that's kind of the funny thing about the whole Tuttle Twins books. Like we're really trying to drive at like what are those core ideas of an open and free society, of human flourishing? What are the basic, decent, good social principles by which all people in a voluntary and free society should be able to live? Great, let's teach those to our kids. Tom, what I found over the years is that there's very little disagreement to many of these ideas, even from people who like have a totally different worldview, right? Like people believe in voluntary exchange. People believe, you know, in the golden rule. It's just that as adults, they've been trained, and I would say kind of propagandized, to add all kinds of asterisks to that, right? Yeah, golden rule, treat others, you know, as they want to, unless they have oil.
Yeah.
or unless they have, you know, speak a funny language and you know, have a different religion or whatever, right? We put these asterisks on these ideas that we all teach our kids. Right? Don't hurt other people. Don't steal their stuff. Oh, no, but taxes is the price we pay for a civilized society, right? Oh, it's the majority rule. It's the will of the public, right? Like we create all these asterisks later in life, but all good parents are teaching these ideas to their kids. And so I feel like our role is more to say to adults, like, nah, those asterisks maybe shouldn't exist. Like, these are the ideas that we should remain consistent in teaching and applying later in life. And so that's what's been fun about the Tuttle Twins, is there's this kind of broader interest in these ideas, even from people who might disagree from a policy perspective because of that asterisk that they cling to. But because you can kind of have that shared foundation and kind of build that on that common bond of these kind of core ideas, especially in the context of them teaching their children those good ideas, it becomes a little bit easier to then communicate with them about those asterisks and those exceptions and help them try and reconcile, you know, that kind of a compartmentalized conflict that they have in their mind.
Well, look, I was so happy to hear that you were doing this that I thought, you know, you were saying, hey, maybe we could do an episode on it. Well, yeah, of course. Yes, obviously we're going to do an episode on this, because the world needs to know what you're doing. And as I say, I see a lot of my old self in you, the one who was never satisfied no matter how much he did and how productive he was and how much he put out there. He's always thinking, well, I could be doing this. And what about this? This sounds like a lot of fun. Wow, I'm glad we have people who still have that zeal. Now, I have zeal in my own way. I mean, I'm still generating a lot of content over here and I write most of the time 2 newsletters a day and stuff. But geez, you are really blazing a trail doing stuff that no one has done before. I mean, really, you did it because nobody was doing it and you knew it needed to be done. Now, that's the kind of spirit that we need. I'm going to link to all your stuff at tomwoods.com/1846. And if you have a final word, we'd love to hear it.
Thank you, Tom, for the kind words. We're very like-minded. I appreciate the friendship over the years. I leave this maybe as a final word. We talked about it briefly earlier, but, you know, we're trying to build this content empire. We're trying to produce, you know, we've got a Tuttle Twins podcast. We've got a card game for families. We've got books of all kinds for all ages now. We've got audiobooks, right? What I'm super excited about in the next year or two is launching this cartoon that we've been working on. So that you can find that at TuttleTwinsTV.com. We raised $1 million as a for-profit investment. So all of Tuttle Twins is under Libertas Institute, which is our nonprofit. This cartoon is a for-profit spinoff. We raised $1 million from basically a lot of our community, chipping in $100, $1,000, whatever. We're now producing the first few episodes. We're going to keep rolling after that. We're expecting the pilot to be out hopefully in the spring and the next few episodes in the months after that. This is going to be a big, big deal. Super high quality cartoon, really professional voice acting. We've got comedians working on the script. It's going to be hilarious and fun and teach these same ideas, but to an even broader audience. It's going to be free to watch. You can download it on your app, stream it on your Roku. We're really trying to go big and broad with this cartoon and just reach so many people. I'm so, you know, optimistic about the future, but also disgusted at what our world has become with, you know, all these lockdowns and Karens and people just bending over and taking it and the restrictions on their freedoms. And I feel like that still presents a lot of opportunities to go and kind of wake people up, red pill them out of the system, help them understand. And so the cartoon, I think, is going to really help in that regard to reach quite a number of people. So thanks for lending your platform to help get the word out about these new toddler books, about kind of the broader stuff that we're doing. I still feel very energized when I wake up in the morning that there's a lot of dragons to go slay, and we're having fun doing it.
Wow. Well, this is more energetic than I've ever heard you. Congratulations again. Best of luck. And we'll talk, I guess, you know, 20 minutes from now when you've accomplished something else. So thanks a lot.
Thanks, Tom. Appreciate it.
All right, folks, find out more about the Tuttle Twins series and pick up the books over at tomwoods.com/twins, and you are really, really going to be glad you did. Now, coming up tomorrow, we got Bob Murphy. Our old friend, the economist Bob Murphy, is returning, and we're going to be talking about the Great Depression and the New Deal, which is a topic we haven't hit on this podcast in a long time, and really not nearly as often as you would think we would have on a podcast like this. But we're going to revisit Bob's book from years ago, The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Great Depression and the New Deal, to coincide with episode number 2 of the animated series that I'm doing with Michael Malice called The Politically Incorrect Guide, because episode 2 happens to cover, guess what? The Great Depression and the New Deal. So Bob's going to come on, and he and I are going to talk about his book. And then I'm going to use that as a lead-in to get you to watch the darn cartoon, which you can watch, by the way, always at pigseries.com. And let's see. So then we got that. Then we got Tom DiLorenzo. He had a great article on LouRockwell.com last week about America's Stalinist universities. He never pulls punches, Tom DiLorenzo. And I got him coming on to talk about that. So we got a fun week coming up. Make sure you subscribe to the Tom Woods Show over at tomwoods.com/apple. So you get all these episodes delivered to you. And incidentally, when you have nearly 2,000 episodes, as I do, it clogs up your feed if you keep them all available in just one feed. So what we've done is I've kind of followed in the footsteps of John Lee Dumas, who has zillions of episodes also. And so we've taken like episode, like maybe it's like 1 to 300. We've made a separate program out of it. So if you look for the Tom Woods Show, you should find Tom Woods Show episodes 1 through 300, episodes 301 through 600, something like that. And that's a way of being able to keep all the episodes available easily online, but not clog them all up in one place. Because as I say, eventually there are problems, and any podcaster will know that it, for whatever reason, it causes problems. So what we've done is we've essentially made separate programs out of some of the previous episodes. So if you're wondering what happened to your feed, why there are only X hundred of them left in there, it's because we've broken them up into all these other programs. So if that makes sense to you, one of these days I'll put links up at tomwoods.com to all of them, but you should be able to find all the previous episodes just by searching Tom Woods Show on your favorite podcatcher. All right, that's all for today, everybody. See you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.